Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League, the Champions League, and even some FA Cup action in this episode. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. The major news, massive news, Roman Abramovich will sell Chelsea Football Club after 19 years in charge. Plus, we'll review the key FA Cup results, including the Blues' comeback win, Spurs continuing their Jekyll and Hyde performances after defeat to the mighty, mighty Middlesbrough, Leicester City's important win over Burnley in the Premier League, Jesse Marsh officially named new manager of Leeds United, and what to expect from this Sunday's Manchester derby. All that coming up in today's episode. Very newsy episode.
Yes, my friend.
Less notes about games and tactics and stuff like that. Yeah. More about some big picture news and really, really, really big news. Rob, let's start with Chelsea and Roman Abramovich. Mm. We know he's been under pressure. We've had various statements of distancing himself from the football club, using the foundation. Then there was reports that, you know, the Swiss businessman was offered the club. And then we have the announcement that Roman Abramovich, yes, is going to sell the football club through pressure, I would assume, Rob, from the British government.
British government, yeah.
With his potential or alleged links with Putin with the war in Ukraine. So, I mean, incredible story, Rob, in terms of Chelsea Football Club, the team, the manager, the fans, of what's happened in the past and what might happen in the future. But how surprised are you, Rob, that we've got to this point so very, very quickly?
Not so surprised, I have to say, mate. I think I was on with Rebecca at the weekend. I think you were off. I think it was me and Tim. And Rebecca's sort of final question was, do you think this could be the beginning of the end? And I think my reply was pretty much like, I think it's a domino effect. And once one falls, I think it could fall very quickly, Rob. I just felt it was kind of heading in that direction. It's huge news for Chelsea Football Club and their fans and everybody associated with it. It's huge news for the league, Rob. This guy has been very instrumental in lots of things throughout the Premier League era. There'll be a certain number of Chelsea fans who only know the Premier League through Roman Abramovich being in charge. It's huge news, Rob, for English football as a whole. This guy, and we're going to separate politics and football because we're here to talk about the football side, you know, with all due respect to what is happening in the world and the Russian invasion of Ukraine and some of the scenes we're seeing. But in terms of football, this guy has had a huge effect on the Premier League. If you think about this football club before he took over, this football club since, this football club's ability to hire and fire managers, Rob, sometimes to our surprise, yet still continue to win trophies, still continue to be successful, still continue to have some of the great players who've played in our league. All that's going to change, and all that comes up in the air, which for me starts to get where we get to the very interesting bit, that this club in the past has almost used destabilizing influences to benefit the club's success. No manager's ever felt like they're here for a long term. Was it 2-3 years generally a manager's at Chelsea and they're gone? Yet all of a sudden, the club, the destabilizing effect of the club now, I think it's a real worry for people around the football club.
Well, I think it will be a worry. We'll get into the main reasons for that. But just to quickly go back to Chelsea before and with Abramovich, I mean, it's pretty stunning reading from their foundation or the founding of the club in 1905 to 2003. Abramovich took over in 2003. So in that 98
nearly 100 years, basically. Isn't it?
Nearly 100 years of history, just six titles. Just six. They won six things and won
six trophies.
One top-flight title. Six trophies, one top-flight title in those nearly 100 years. And, of course, in Abramovich's era, 17 trophies. I mean, I think it's five Premier Leagues, two UEFA Champions League, two UEFA Cups, five FA Cups, Rob. I don't know what else. I mean, they basically...
Three League Cups, one Club World Cup, two Europa League, two Champions League, five Premier League. I mean, serial winners, mate. Serial winners.
And because of money. Because of money. Mm-hmm. Because of the money that he injected into that club. And I guess the desire that he had to win. hence the sacking managers and making the changes and buying some of the star players. He spent a load of money to build this team, to build this club, actually try to build it in a sustainable way after a few, four or five seasons, talked about sustainability. But I think he's always had to inject money, Rob, into the club.
Yeah.
And the success has been there. So fair play. And I think also we spoke about it just before, Rob, about the impact that he's made, or that the money made and the new Chelsea made on the league. Before this 2003, it was kind of Man United and Arsenal fighting, battling with Wenger and Ferguson. And then you got this new money coming in, and it upset those kind of, I don't know, paradigms.
The established clubs didn't really like it, did they? Because all of a sudden, somebody was coming in who could buy the best players, who could hire the best managers, who didn't have to watch their budgets, who almost had like this war chest of money that they could go out and buy anybody. That did change the face of English football. The Wengers of the world had to try and start doing it a different way. Even Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, the great Manchester United, who, you know, as a football club, were making money through commercial opportunities, but weren't at the level, you know, that we now see the Man Cities, we see the Newcastle ownership of the Saudi
it's
group.
New money. It's
new money. But he was the first, wasn't he? He was the pioneer of new money coming into the league. And also, I think, coming into the league, Rob, but turning success around quickly. They didn't come into the league and take 5 or 6 years to settle and have a look at it. I mean, he brought in Mourinho, and pretty much the rest, they say, is history.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And that's what's happened, Rob. But now that's about to end. If it's right that he's about
what
to sell,
to believe.
And there
are the
right buyers that want to pay the right amount of money. You get a sense that this has got to be kind of time sensitive. But
it's going to be quite quickly.
Quick,
hasn't it?
What's going to happen with the government or whatever? Mm. You know, you could argue this has been coming for a few years now with the citizenship issues in the UK, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. My thought on this, Rob, immediately bounces to the future and what it means for a club that's been such heavily backed in the transfer market and with personal loans that he's saying he doesn't want to get paid back. We know that they've done a great job with the recruitment over the years and have produced players, have gone on loan, that they've ended up using the first team, but more often not, they've ended up selling for a profit. That's all kind of good work. And then that might be coming to an end with some changes FIFA and UEFA are talking about with loan rules. But the money, unless they get somebody else, Rob, that's a similar type of guy that wants to inject cash in there, it's going to be different. They're not going to compete, Rob, are they? Unless they get a similar sort of guy, they won't be able to. I mean, maybe good news for the manager now and for a new owner that he's recently spent a lot of money, hasn't he? Spent a lot of money on these young players.
Yeah, and players put loans in and things.
So he's got a lot of players in there. But do you see like there could be a slow coming away from top competitiveness in the Premier League?
A lot of the future of Chelsea, Rob, hangs in the profile of the type of owner. By that, I mean, remember Hicks and Gillette came in at Liverpool, big American noise, there was all this talk.
Yeah.
Didn't want to come in there and put money in, Rob. Didn't want to come in there and do it. We're almost, some would believe, maybe looking at it as a way to earn money. You know, the Glazers, we can talk about their ownership and what they've done and how the Manchester United's dissatisfaction with the way they've run. You know, the Cronkies is another one. You know, are they going to be, is this a either an ownership or a fund that comes in that's looking to make the best of what's that Chelsea, and that might be appealing based on the money that this guy's put in already. Are we going to get another profile like an Abramovich? And to be fair to Abramovich, Rob, in terms of football, regardless of expense, if it led to success and there was a rationale behind it, this guy generally put the money in. He bought the players, he backed his managers and whatever. Yeah, he might hire and sack them, but he backed his guys. And there was a couple of things I was thinking about Chelsea. It was one of the clubs when I first got out of TV and was in media, spent a bit of time, lived not far from the training ground, got to know it a little bit. And there is something about Chelsea, Rob, where it's situated in London, it's in the cool part of London, it carries a kudos. Seeing the King's Road, Chelsea carries a kudos. You've got a great set of players, you've got a fantastic manager, you've got an infrastructure that's pretty good, a training facility that's second to none, you've got an academy of young players that some out in different places and some that you've got. It's an appealing buy, Rob, for the right person. It's a very appealing. It's a club that you go in. The Saudi group bought Newcastle on the knowledge that it's going to take some time, and we don't know where it'll end up, but I think people believe in a certain amount of time with a certain amount of money, they'll maybe start competing. Chelsea are competing from the moment you walk through the door. They're competing,
yeah.
Rob.
Yeah, there's something in the Telegraph, Rob, that I laughed at. There's a headline on their back of there talking about Abramovich selling and the Saudis would be kicking themselves if they didn't wait a little longer. Because maybe the Saudis would have loved to buy for the reason you just talked about. The only thing that they haven't got, Rob, in terms of we're assuming that there isn't going to be another multi-billionaire that's going to really put money in.
Yeah,
they haven't got a big stadium. And the revenue from the stadium will be down on the others, some of the other big ones. Now, we know that Abramovich talked about a new stadium.
I think there's a lot of issues with a new stadium, isn't it? There's some ownership by a group, by a supporters group. There's lots of things with the council and where they could build in West London and the size of space they'd want.
So that could be another reason why revenues might not match some of the other so-called big clubs in the league.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I think it is an attractive proposition, of course, given the manager and particularly the players, a good bunch of young, talented Premier League players that are proven that are winning things. Yeah. But just over a longer period of time, again, I'll say it once more, Abramovich just invested a ton of money. Werner and, of course, Lukaku and Kai Havertz, you know, some of the younger players that's there now and developed in and reached. It's a good squad and he's injected money in. But I don't know, mate.
Can I just, because we are talking about the future and we've talked about the past and we've been cognizant of the Abramovich situation and the divisive position that he's in. Chelsea fans obviously, love him because of what he's done to the football club. The other people in football are looking at it with very different eyes on, and quite rightly. But let's just for a moment, Rob, and say it is going to sell. You talked about that. It might be quickly. I know the Premier League have said, you know, if the right buyer comes along and ticks all the boxes and passes the relevant tests, that it could go quickly. So you get the sense everybody's looking for this to move. But I was kind of thinking, just nuts and bolts at Chelsea. You've got two or three players whose contracts are up who don't quite know if they're going to sign or they're going to leave. You've got someone like, I think it's Mason Mount, whose contract's due, what happens with those? Thomas Tuchel, Robbie Musto, is a very, very interesting manager. Smart, articulate, empathetic, understanding, worldly. He's had his back pushed up a little bit this week, and I felt a bit sorry for him because the journalists were asking him questions that were out of his pay grade, really, not within his remit. And I think once or twice, I wouldn't say bit, he strongly tried to put them in their position. But is he the kind of manager, either depending on what happens, depending on who comes in, depending on the next regime or what's going on at the football club, is he the kind of guy who might decide this might not quite be for him? I know he's done brilliant work at the football club and he seems got a brilliant relationship with some of the people. But let's just say some of the back room, the ownership, say things change. I'm talking about change. When you've got change and you've got as much kind of concern going on at the football club, I don't think it's healthy. I just think it's an unhealthy environment. Now, I'm not saying he should go. I'm not saying he will go. And I'm not saying, I'm just kind of thinking that the personality of the man wouldn't surprise me, but we'll want certain assurances in the way he works, in the way the football club's going to go forward. Maybe that's a better way of saying it.
He may look for that, Rob, yeah, and that's understandable. He's going to work out the future.
Yeah, like, correct.
I mean, he's going to get no answers right now until the club's sold and there's a new owner.
Yeah.
And he starts to get a sense of what it's going to be and what it's going to look like and what's the board going to be, directors and all that, and what's the
Owners generally bring in, and I know that it's very different with this guy, and it's very different because of football club, because he's winning and they've won trophies and whatever, but don't owners sometimes come in with their own view of their own man, their own guy?
Yeah, but I can't imagine an owner coming in and having a different
I'm just putting it out there.
More that Tuchel might say, you know what, it's a good time for me to get out? Is that what you're suggesting, that he might just...
Not really get out, because I don't think he's looking to get out. But I just think he's worked in a certain way that's been successful with a certain group of people that's successful. If some of that changes, and he's not able to work in the same manner, he might just think, ah, you know, he's been very, I thought he's led the club in the last couple of weeks brilliantly. And couldn't impeccably the way he spoke and held himself and behaved. I just think if some of that changes and it changes what he does on a day-to-day, the relationships he has on a day-to-day. Let's just say, I know he's got a very strong relationship with Marina and Petr Cech. Let's say those two are taken out of the frame because they were of the old regime. And the new guy comes in. Who the new guy is, we don't particularly like this, or we don't like, or has an opinion, or all of a sudden that changes his relationship with the club and how he's doing his work. That's my worry, if I'm a Chelsea fan. That would be my worry.
Yeah, I think it's like, in terms of his contract, Robert, I know he's signed an extension to that initial 18-month contract.
Yeah, he had 18 months,
signed a little bit longer, given the Champions League victory. Yeah. But I'm sure it's not a super long contract. Mm. I think what he's done has been pretty remarkable. I think from the day one, Rob, when we heard him speak in interviews, you know, it's pretty obvious that he's an intelligent guy, honest guy, and his work has been pretty good. I mean, this season maybe hasn't been as good as we thought, but whatever happens, he's going to have a lot of, if he comes dissatisfied for any reason, if the owner does some stupid things, or he's not, doesn't feel like, I mean, he's going to have a ton of people that want to take him. I mean, lots of other places that would love to have Thomas Tuchel, given what he's done, the way he carries himself and the way that his team plays. So, but I don't, of all the things going on, Rob, I don't think that's going to be the concern of the fans right now. I think the fans will be more concerned about future in general and signings and money. And they realise the benefit they've had from Roman Abramovich for all these, the £1.5 billion that he's lent to the club and doesn't want to pay back. I mean, that's an incredible amount of money. But it just shows you that he has kept putting money in to keep them competitive. And when Hazard left and a few others, you're like, okay, we need to go again. And here's Werner and here's Lukaku and here's Kai Havertz and all these players came in. So, yeah, we'll move it on, Rob. But, I mean, it's just we can't understate what a big, big story this is in terms of not just the football club, but the league in general.
Yeah.
And others that have been struggling to fight alongside Chelsea or to overcome Chelsea, given the financial resources they've had for the last 19 years under their current owner right now. So that's the fascinating thing for me is, wow, where does Chelsea football go? I mean, I remember playing there, Rob, when I was 17, 18, starting coming through, I played in the Oxford United reserves, and we used to play Chelsea in the reserve league. And going to Stamford Bridge then, it was the worst. I mean,
the hot track, weeks, the track around the pitch.
On the track and stuff like
there'd
that.
Be some people that honestly Google, you know, Stamford Bridge for back in the day, 80s, late 80s, early 90s. It was a different place than what you see now. Completely different place. I mean, different atmosphere.
It did improve, didn't it? I remember Ken Bates was there before.
Yeah, Ken Bates started when they... Yeah, with the Taylor Report, and then it went to a whole new different level. And they've been a brilliant club. And you know, the way that they've gone about the business, the success they've had, it's been, you know, wildly impressive. But it's going to be a different Chelsea from here on in, Rob. Different ownership. Yeah. We'll have to see what effect that has on the football and what we talk about. What goes on the pitch. Let's move it to the FA Cup, mate, because there was a number of games this weekend, and certainly involving Premiership clubs. We'll start with Chelsea, because they were away at Luton, which was not necessarily an easy time. Nathan Jones gone back to Luton, where he started after a couple of... was at Stoke, particularly for a while, didn't work out. But his team gave him a bit of a scare. Had to come from behind twice, Chelsea, to win. Timo Werner was involved in most good things, got an assist in the goal himself. Romelu Lukaku started a game, Rob, and got himself a goal, which he looked really pleased and thankful for, even to the FA Cup against a Championship team. And Chelsea win in the end, despite what was going on and noise around the club and focus and defeating the League Cup, they did what they had to do and made it through to the quarterfinal, mate.
Yeah, I did. I watched this one, and I mean, Lukaku was generally quiet, but he got his goal, a really good goal. Werner with a nice ball through, he slides in and scores. Werner scores and takes the goal really well himself. But they weren't great, and they went behind, and the two goals they conceded, like, the defence was missing for it. They did what they had to do, and they found a way to come back and win the game, and they played better in the second half. But it was a bit of a, like a typical FA Cup, Luton Town away. I mean, it's...
tight, rubbishy floodlights weren't, you know, it was dark. And but they
that's the FA Cup, isn't it?
It's the FA Cup, and they found a way to win. There's many changes, as you'd imagine, from the team for Chelsea. Yeah. But I think the story probably was Werner and Lukaku, two forwards that have been brought to the club for much money and haven't really done it. So they'll feel better, but it is only Luton away for them. So they'll take the goals and they'll move on. They'll go to the next round, which is great. But it wasn't a brilliant game, and you know, the headline really is Lukaku and Werner, and the changes that were made, different systems and stuff. But
I didn't see much of the game, but I just looked at, you know, I was looking at just the lineups and whatever, and I saw back three. Was it Saul, Loftus-Cheek and Rudiger? It was a back three initially. Is that how they started?
No.
Because I had somewhere Saul, Loftus-Cheek and Rudiger, and I was like, put Loftus-Cheek in.
No, it was Saul. It was not Saul.
I said Saul, but was Loftus-Cheek at centre-back?
Yeah.
Because I've not really seen him play there for a while. No. He's generally a midfield player, or sometimes played under the 10, hasn't he? How did he do in midfield?
I think they switched to a back three role. I think it started as a four, and they switched because Hudson-Odoi played right wing back.
Yeah, right wing back. I got Kennedy left wing back. Yeah. Saul and Jorginho. But the back three was Saul, Loftus-Cheek and Rudiger. And it just surprised me. I thought, Loftus-Cheek is a centre-back. I just thought, what an interesting position that could be for him if you're going to play out the back. Is that somewhere you could see more from him, could benefit?
I don't think so, personally. I mean, they like I said, they conceded two goals, and they're all looking at each other when the first guy goes through early on, scores, you know, a really well-taken goal to get in behind very easily. Yeah. Loftus-Cheek doesn't strike me as being a defensive-conscious, really conscientious type of defender.
Yeah.
But, you know, Pulisic came on, Reece James came on, more minutes for him. There was a few system changes throughout the game, but it settled down to Kennedy wing back and Hudson-Odoi right wing back.
Interesting. An interesting one. I was just interested in how that looked and whether that was maybe food for thought down the road. Somebody who's continued to have food for thought. They're up and they're down. They're up and they're down. They're Antonio Conte's Tottenham, who against the mighty musty Middlesbrough got themselves a 1-0 defeat. And I have to say, on what I saw and I watched this game, which was this game, was Borough deserved it, mate. I thought Borough played particularly well and deserved the victory.
You wouldn't know. I mean, you wouldn't know which is the team going for the top four and which is in the Championship. And I think, you know, there's lots of talk about Antonio Conte and the way he plays. I mean, they're outpossessed by Middlesbrough. Which brings up the whole, you know, really? You know, and of course, listen, I love Middlesbrough and I love the club and stuff, but to be the players that you've got at Spurs and to be kind of reactive and passive was like head scratching. Now, as the game went on, Rob, to be fair, both teams could have scored a lot of times. It wasn't super tight, super boring, super defensive. I mean, Middlesbrough gave as good as they got. They had as many opportunities, probably more than Spurs in the end, and deserved a 1-0 victory. Josh Coburn, the 19-year-old, comes on and strikes through the ball. He's got an eye for goal, this kid, and strikes through the ball beautifully into that far corner. I mean, it just brings back memories of when I was there and we went on cup runs in the late 90s. Mm. We got to three cup finals in two seasons, FA Cup final in 1997. This is them through to the next round now. I know the Riverside would have been full and bouncing and buzzing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was a great scenes, wasn't it, to see it back buzzing? It hasn't been for a while, has it? It hasn't been for some time, but been buzzing like that.
And now there's apart from this, Chris Wilder, the new manager, has injected so much to the team, both in the league as well now. So there's a real sense of excitement about, we've finally got a really... the right man, Rob, to get him back into the Premier League, which is always the job there. But FA Cup helps, you know, helps the team, helps the players. It's just brilliant, you know, from being there and being around the town with a cup run. It's pretty exciting. Fans are buzzing with it. And to beat Spurs, another Premier League, Man United and Spurs now, Rob, they've knocked out the FA Cup.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Fair play to my old team. And as you said, deserved it. Like, created more chances to score. Good for the Borough.
Some musty love for the Boroughs. They go past Tottenham. Another down day for Antonio Conte. And As I was thinking about this, Robert, I just wrote a note. I was sort of writing little notes about the games and whatever. And I was kind of thinking, like, we know what, like, the change to a back four in the end. He took off his wing back. He was trying different systems, trying to get back in the game. Created one or two chances, Spurs, but not great. But I was almost thinking, like, penny for the thoughts of Antonio Conte, like, deep down, Rob, when he goes home and talks to his wife or whoever he talks to or somebody in Italy, what's he really think about this Tottenham team?
Well,
what's he really think about, can I shape this? You know, given time, given money, let's say, can this work? I don't know, as I'm watching him, Rob, and he's going through his emotions and you see him, and he's very, you know, expressive and you know, yeah. we love all that and you see it all heart on the sleeve and all that stuff, but to a side, deep down, do you think he believes in this group?
You know, you're pointing to, it's to all the players' fault, and it's fault. And it's
you've got to listen to me. I'm saying, I'm not saying any of those things. What more my point is, do you think inside he believes he can be successful at that football club?
Well, he should think that, shouldn't he?
No, that's what I'm saying. But that's the question. I'm not saying that he shouldn't think that. I'm saying, there's something in me when I watch him that makes me think he's not convinced. He did. Let's remember at Chelsea. He didn't go to the Chelsea when he won the title. The first four games he played the system, he let them play, and then he changed, you know, the famous change of back three, they win the game. He believes in that, what he's doing. I'm not sure when I was seeing, he really, really believes in this group. That it will take time, that he's got something to do, but he can turn that around. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. I agree that I don't think he thinks that this team is anywhere near what's required to finish in the top spaces in the Premier League. I think that's agreed. That was known beforehand, by the way, because previous managers have struggled to do that. Mm-hmm. Some big-name managers struggle to get to the very, very top.
Yeah.
Where I'm starting to have a bit of a problem is some of these bad results are bad. And the players aren't that bad, Rob. It's not that bad a team to lose to Southampton, Burnley and Middlesbrough. Does it always have to be, well, look at this lot. You know, I'm this, I've done that.
That's kind of the point I'm saying is he believe that he's not, I don't know, did he can't, it's not going to happen for this group. They're not going to listen to what I say.
Well, is he trying, do you feel like he's sort of saying that these aren't good enough for me? I don't know what to do about it.
That's my question. Is that what he's starting to say? I'm a good manager. I don't think these guys are going to be able to do what I want to do, and I'm not going to have the time. I haven't got the time to, however long it's going to take, to get them where I want them.
So that's awful. That's awful, isn't it? If I'm his owner, or I'm his director of football, Daniel Levy, what?
Which is what?
You've taken the
job. For Spurs, you got yourself another problem. Yeah, you've just inherited another problem.
Stop whinging and moaning about what you've got.
You know, you accept Nuno never said that. You never got the sense Nuno looked at that group and said they aren't this. I mean, wherever you think Nuno's a manager, it didn't work and he got the sack. When I look at Conte, it's almost as though I got the sense that he's feeling, nah, I'm not sure how this one's going to work out.
What do you mean?
There's too much to do. It's going to take too long.
He's going to quit then.
Well, he's going to be some. I'm just suggesting, let's just follow the story and let's see. I think somewhere down the line, and I think Danny's been saying for a while, he won't start next season, whether he does or not. Let's wait and see. I don't know. As I'm watching him, Rob, and I'm a body language and looking and relationship and thing, it just almost looks to me like,
He doesn't fancy it. That's what he's saying. His body language doesn't fancy it. I don't disagree, by the way. I think that's exactly what we're seeing, body language in interviews.
Mm.
Like, as if he doesn't really fancy it. Now, this is less about, you know, we thought the big throw the toys out of the pram was going to be the money, and I need more money to bring in top players. But it hasn't really been that. Yeah, he's just from results to 1 week to the next week, they've been inconsistent. He's like, well, I can't, you know, how can I work with these groups?
Yeah.
And I think it's a disappointing look.
For him,
you know what? This is a little bit tougher than I thought. We're working to try and get consistent. We're going to try and stop the goals going in. You know, we've had a certain amount of time. We've got some great players here. We have brought some other players in. You know, it's his job to be excited about trying to improve them. And if he thought he was going to go in there and his magic tactical stuff that we've seen at other clubs was going to work every single time, is not true. This one needs more work. It needs more care, more coaching, more. It just needs more of it. And he's got to show the Spurs fans that he's ready to do that instead of being upset and angry and screaming at everybody else about, apart from, okay, wow, this is a difficult job. And, you know, my reputation's at stake here a little bit. I got to find a way to not lose at Middlesbrough or Burnley or Southampton or some of the other games that they've missed out. So I want to see him cry less and work harder in what he's got there.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case between now and the end of the season. Yeah. We'll see how that all plays out. And obviously, challenging for 4 spots now, pretty much all they got left for the season for Antonio Conte and his team. Let's sort of whirl through the other FA Cups. Man City, 2-0 winners away at Peterborough again. One of them, brilliant performance, Rob. I saw a bit of the game. Jack Grealish got a goal, lovely goal. Foden and Grealish created. Mahrez got the first. Got the job done away from home. Liverpool, 2-0. Minamino with a couple of goals. I think it was important then. Again, I looked at the teams, Liverpool teams, and somebody said to me, in the past, when Liverpool have changed in the Cups, they've kind of left themselves a bit short. I think, talking to what we've said on the podcast over the last few weeks, there's a depth to Liverpool now that makes them better, stronger, and bizarrely, it's the first time they got to the quarterfinals under Klopp in the FA Cup, which kind of adds to that line that, you know, the strength's there now, 2-1 winners. Big result for Southampton, mate. Southampton 3, West Ham 1. Yeah, Ralph Fassin will continue to do good work, doesn't he? Flying at the moment. Brozier with a goal. Perreault with a beautiful strike from left back. And the Ward-Prowse goal was enough to beat a West Ham team that would be disappointing for David Moyes. And then Crystal Palace 2, Stoke 1. Which is a great result for Palace. And pleased for Palace because under Roy Robb, they never really had a cup run. They kind of went out of cups quite early and obviously were pretty, you know, got themselves safe. And I always used to think for Palace, they don't have that peak where at least they get to, you know, quarter final, semi final. You start thinking, no apology to come to Wembley some years back now. But it was nice for Palace to get the results and obviously go into the last stages of a competition.
You know what? When you look at teams that I would really think they must fancy a cup run, it's two teams that won, Southampton and Crystal Palace, Rob.
In
previous seasons, they've been looking over the shoulder, they've been fighting relegation, they're not sure about, well, you know, FA Cup's great and all that, but we've got to make sure we get the right team for the league to keep those scraps going. Two teams that have changed the narrative this season, Southampton and Crystal Palace, you know, bit of doom and gloom from last year, lots of changes at Palace. They've had a really good Premier League season so far. Why not go for a cup run? So I bet the fans are like, this is great.
Yeah,
like, no worries in the league. Let's go for it. We're in the quarter final of the FA Cup. Absolutely fantastic because everybody loves a cup run in England. It's just it's just exciting for the fans to potentially play at Wembley as you do in the FA Cup now in the semi-final. And one thing, Rob, that I think was a real nice touch of all these games, the Peterborough Man City game. Alexander Zinchenko, of course, Ukrainian, was given the captaincy from Fernandinho for the day, walking out with the Peterborough captain out the tunnel holding the Ukraine flag.
Yeah, it was right absolutely good shout. Made a good shout.
It was a lovely thing to see.
Yeah, a touching moment wasn't it, in this period where we're seeing some horrible scenes from over in Ukraine and people sheltering and just trying to keep themselves safe. And yeah, you're right. It's a really good shout to see that.
Football is. As in many situations, Rob, it stands together, football.
It can be a healer, can't it?
Yeah, and people care about it. I know the Premier League are doing lots of things this weekend. The captains are wearing special the colours of Ukraine on their armbands. I think there's a moment of solidarity, I think, before kickoff this weekend. So, you know, I think the Premier League is trying to...
The league deserves a lot of credit for that. We saw it through Black Lives Matter and things. It takes on these causes and does reflect well on the league, I think, and the management of the league. So, yeah, it's a really good shout, mate. Really good shout. Just before we move on to a Premier League game that took place this week, actually, it's just a reminder that Everton have a tricky little game against Bournemouth today, which is one of those.
Recording
Just before this, I mean... Let's hope we're not doing an emergency podcast tomorrow. And Boreham would have got one over Frank's Everton at Goodison Park. I'm sure Frank will get through that one and they'll concentrate on Premier League. Talking about the Premier League and at the bottom of the table, Burnley, who were in really good form, came up against Leicester City with a certain Jamie Vardy back in the lineup, mate. No surprise, he comes off the bench, makes a goal, scores a goal. Leicester win 2-0. First win for Leicester, I believe, this since the turn of the year. And disappointing day for Burnley at home when they were picking up points and looking to get out that bottom three.
Yeah, I listened to Sean Dyche afterwards, Rob, saying how disappointed he was. He didn't want to criticise his team, but he said, like, we've had a lot of big games recently. We've needed to win, and the performance was there. We just didn't have the spark today against Leicester. I thought Leicester's point of view, Rob, they looking a little bit more familiar now. I know, you'd expect him to start and Vardy. Both players came off the bench and both scored the goals in this game. But I just looked at the game, and they just looked... Leicester looked a little bit more like what you might expect. And I got a feeling they're gonna do all right now. You know, they've had some issues and pressure on Brendan Rodgers. I thought it was pretty good. And Burnley's still in it. I mean, these are games now, that they're all the makeup games, of course, that they had to play. They're still, they've played
25. They played 25 now, one more than Everton. Yeah. They're points.
One less than Leeds that are banging trouble. Yeah. We'll talk about them next. Mm. So Burnley's still in it. Brentford. They're just still in it. And they need Weghorst up front with Cornet as well to get them the goals, because everything else in that team is going to be okay for the most part. This wasn't a great one. You'd think they might have a chance of getting something from Leicester with the muscle and the energy they often show against teams, but not in this one. Leicester deserved a 2-0 victory.
It did. And we'll move it on to what is very... It's actually 2K backward step. Jesse Marsh in at Leeds would have been huge headlines normally. US manager taking over a Premier League club and obviously the Bielsa mutual consent leaving the football club. But in light of what's happened at Chelsea, it's been very much down the pecking order. But Jesse Marsh at Leeds is big news, my friend. Is a very big story.
It's a very, very big story. It was a big, big move. Andrea Radrizzani is the owner, the Italian owner at Leeds United. And, you know, the statement came out that it's a very difficult decision that he made to sack Marcelo Bielsa. And he's made the big call in Jesse March. It's Victor Orterop, who's the director of football at Leeds United, that really is a proper director of football, hires and fires, picks the players. Yeah. He was at my previous club, is at my Middlesbrough for a little bit of time. Now he's at Leeds United, and he's been tracking Jesse Marsh for a number of years now, and feels like the way that Marsh coaches is kind of similar to Bielsa, the same kind of energy, the same forward momentum, the same kind of high pressing, these diagonal forward, you know, quick football, quick attack, transitional football where they want to get forward and attack, kind of in keeping with what we're seeing. I say kind of because Bielsa's stuff is so way different that's going to be difficult in itself. So an incredibly difficult job of any, you know, any club to walk into. It must be the toughest managerial position that he could walk into in the Premier League. It just is. Given following a legend, given the team struggles right now, given the spine of the team, certainly Kelvin Phillips and Patrick Bamford still are injured, is incredibly important and difficult. And given the fact he's an American, which shouldn't make a difference, it shouldn't matter, but sadly it does. I feel this is going to be a little bit different to Bob Bradley. I think with the more experience that he's had in European competition, and let's not forget, he was trusted and selected to coach RB Leipzig, which is
After Nagelsmann, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's a lot of trust. Now, it didn't work out, granted. Yeah. He left the club after 5 months, but to be in that position, he must do a lot of things well. Now, we'll see. He's got to do a lot of things well straight away in a different league, in an incredibly atmospheric, like, fever pitch Leeds United. And we've already seen an interview, Rob, and he's already expressed what he knows about the Leeds United. He knows the history of the team. He understands that. But, I mean, just from our point of view, after being there, playing there, etc., the expectation, the pressure on Jesse Marsh is going to be huge.
It's interesting you talk, though, about his nationality and what that means and whether it's a good or bad thing, whether people are going to talk about the Ted Lasso and the Brad Bobley, which was, you know, caricatures of Bob Bradley going in at Swansea. But I've got to be honest, Rob, if I was a Leeds fan and as a football watcher, I loved Jesse Marsh's response in the interview. Listen to this.
Jesse, do you feel there's a stigma around American coaches in English football? You joked this week about people might not like your accent, and Bob Bradley had a hard time when he was there. How do you sort of battle against
it? Yeah, I think there's probably a stigma. I'm not sure Ted Lasso helped. I haven't watched the show, but I get it. I get it. Like, people hate hearing the word soccer. They hate hearing, you know, I mean, I've used the word football since I was a professional football player. I think more and more in the States, we're adapting to what the game here is in England and our connection with what this league is and what the culture of the sport is in this country. I can understand that they don't think that we have the experiences that can be created here in Europe. Frankly, they're right. Right? I mean, it was the reason I came to Europe. It was the reason I learned German. It was the reason I tried to adapt to new cultures. This is the fifth country I've coached football in. So, and it takes me out of my comfort zone every time. It challenges me to grow and develop and learn new things. I'm very open to that. I'm very cognizant of the fact that I'm not perfect and I don't want to be. And all I can say is the only way I know how to do things is to go all in, to give everything I have, to believe in who I am, to believe in the people that I work with, and to try to maximize what we are every day. And I find if you can do that effectively, that you can be incredibly surprised with the human spirit and what you can achieve. So that sounds like Ted Lasso, I think, from what I've heard.
Absolutely, brilliant. It did sound like
brilliant. Brilliant.
Brilliant answer.
What a great response, though, mate, to an English media who's sitting there waiting for something to drop. Comes across worldly, Rob.
Yeah.
Intelligent, smart, has been in other countries. Self-deprecating, is can be prepared to have a laugh at himself and have a laugh at the thing and embrace that and not be, you know, get his back up. I'm looking forward to it. I've got to be honest, he's been in, as he talked about, he's managed in five countries, he's had experience. So as ever, you do a little bit of reading, try and find up. And I heard that after he's, he got the job, he said he's got a million things that he wants to get across and say, but he's just going to make sure the few things he has to say are acted on, and we'll build our relationship as we go along. So that's so important to do, because we've all been there where new manager comes in and you try and put everything into two training sessions your whole career, and players a bit like, you can have an overload of tactic and information. And listen, he's got a good dressing room, he's obviously got a great spirit about him, he's got to tap into that and find the right way to just manoeuvre it in his way. But now I'm really, really looking forward to what this Leeds adventure could be. And listen, he's got a job on, mate. He's got to get them out of relegation trouble.
You know, it shouldn't be so important, Rob, but it really is the way that managers interview, like those types of situations,
post-game
interviews, after-game interviews, like the quick flash interviews afterwards.
Yeah,
it really is important how you come across. And again, it shouldn't be, but if he's smart and he says the right things, then journalists, if he gets on the right side of the journalists, it changes a lot. And then fans read that stuff. They'll give him a little bit of leeway, possibly.
Correct.
Of course, the one thing that stops that dead in the tracks is his performance
results,
is not better.
Results,
and there's one thing, well, we can say about, you know, good answer and, you know, there's a bunch of reasons why he should be getting the opportunity, but if performance doesn't improve quickly, it will be difficult given the guy that he's followed and given that big decision to say, you know what, we don't think we're going to stay up with Marcelo Bielsa, we've got to make a change. And to a change to a guy that's not coached in England before, you can't point to any big club in Europe that he's had success. Salzburg, well done, two League Cup doubles.
Yeah.
They're winning the league this year. I think they won it the last 8 or 9 years, Salzburg. But anyway, but he was trusted to get that Leipzig job. And there's just got to be an immediate performance upshift. Fit team, still one of the fittest in the league. Some good midfield players, Rob. And the only thing I would say, I don't know whether we spoke about this before, but the goals come from midfield players at Leeds right now. There's no striker. And by the way, I'm not sure that's Bielsa's fault that there wasn't a second striker. You go back to Victor Orta, director of football.
They wanted somebody in the window, didn't they?
That so made it super difficult. But you've got to be able to release Dan James, Jack Harrison and Rafinha, Rob, to go and do their thing. I think Jesse Marsh will. But if you went in with a Roy Hodgson go in there and try
dropping them deep.
He's going to try everybody back to improve their defensive thing, which is important. But importance is about winning. It's about winning. And you've got to score a goal to win. If you've got all your attacking players doing defensive work, then, you might concede less goals, but you're still going to concede. So that. But I think with Jesse Marsh, the whole point is that he is an attack-minded coach. And he will bring, he's already said it, a different defensive structure.
Mindset,
That he's got to try and reprogram the defender's mind. Because can you... I mean, just think, Rob, like, if you think back... Wouldn't you think that you've been doing this for 4 years now? I think it's 4.5 years under Bielsa where you're tracking midfield player. Are you going to find yourself doing the same
thing? Getting caught between the two or not quite sure.
Is it going to be difficult, Rob? Practically difficult to be zonal? Because for people... I
think it's tweaks, Rob, isn't it, first? They might be poor man-to-man in at certain places and working it so the players are comfortable. Yeah. It's interesting that Tim said he's worked... Obviously, Tim knows Jesse Marsh and worked with him, knows his kind of methodology and that. And he said it's actually a really good fit for Leeds. He feels that, you know, there's lots of things and what Bielsa did in the tactics that will fit right into what Jesse Marsh wants to do. He will adapt a little bit, that defending. And the other one, Rob, just for me, just on a very personal note, my son's best friend is they went to play college together, Aaron Long, who has ended up being a US international, actually captaining the US team. So Aaron was sort of at Seattle and Portland for a bit, and Jesse Marsh took him to the Red Bulls. And from there on, Aaron's career took off, and we've had a couple of conversations with Aaron, and he talks glowingly of Marsh in terms of his football, what he does on a day-to-day basis, what he does individually, how he gives such your targets. He said he made me way better player, he made me a way better person. Just glowing marks, and said, like, you know, he'll do well if he gets to the right setup in Europe, he'll do well. So you know, Aaron's somebody I know very well and I've got a lot of respect for, and when he talks at that level and was glowing in terms of what Jesse Marsh can do, he is hoping, because we've seen now, you know, American players make that breakthrough and go into big European teams and that, and we've still got this kind of stigma around coaches and managers that they can't quite do it in European level or in some of the big leagues. So great opportunity for Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, good luck to Jesse.
Let's see how that goes at Leeds. Let's move on finally, mate. There's a big game happening at the weekend at the Etihad. Manchester City facing Manchester United. Dare I say both teams not in sparkling form. City, you know, the one they win Everton and the winning in the League Cup. United coming off a 0-0 draw against Watford. What do you think? Who do you fancy? How's it going?
Well, you've only got to look at the league table and the numbers to say that City will be favourites. They're playing at home, Rob. They know they've got Liverpool chomping at the bit right behind them, coming up on their tails. You know, that it's the way that they're playing right now isn't the optimum, but I still think with the way that they pass the ball, they're going to dominate possession of the game. It's more about Man United for me, Rob. I think we know what City are going to do. We just know. I know how they're going to play. I know how the flow of the game's going to go. I know they're going to go down one side, try and find a way, go to the other side. I think we know the pattern of the game. It comes down more to how United play and how they defend and who plays defensively.
Because
structurally, they have been better as a unit. And actually, a lot of parts of their game have been pretty good under Ralf Rangnick. It's just the scoring part.
Yeah.
Now, this game is very different from what they'd normally get, because they normally dominate and trying to find a way through, like Watford. Tons of shots, create stuff, but people aren't scoring goals. They're not sticking the ball away.
Yeah.
This is going to be different, because this will be more about counter-attack for Manchester United. No doubt about that. I would assume that at least two of these three, Sancho, Alanga and Rashford, Rob, would play because of their pace.
Rashford's done well against City in the past, hasn't he? I don't know if that sort of helps him in any way.
That's when he's at his best, for sure. Running, you know, with the ball played in behind.
Yeah, some counter.
So we might see Rashford, I would think. But, I mean, Rangnick's a thinker, you know, and he'll try and come up with something, Rob. It's just whether they can rally themselves and have a team performance to stop the you know the superb machine that is Manchester City. That as ever is the hardest question. Defensively, they got to be strong. 4-4, whatever.
Does Harry Maguire start in your back four? If it's four, I mean, there is an option for three. He's generally not gone as three as a rule. Does Harry Maguire come back in?
Not for me, doesn't. I mean, the last game was Wan-Bissaka and Alex Telles. I think Luke Shaw probably comes back in at left back, but I'm not 100% confident about that. But I think Varane and Lindelof, given the type of players that Man City are, Rob, the sharp, quick, creative, you want, like, Lindelof's quicker on his feet, isn't he? And Varane quicker as well. So I would think those two would continue. Mm. I mean, it wasn't awful against, you know, they're pretty strong defensively against Watford, as you'd expect. So, I would expect Lindelof to partner Rafael Varane.
So I've got two others. Paul Pogba. It's a day when you're not going to have that much ball, Rob. If we're going to play him as either a midfield player in that eight, it's going to have to be a lot of work without the ball. And that's the worry, isn't it? When we sometimes don't see the best of Pogba, or he slightly lets himself down with that responsibility of following markers, of being strong, of winning
filling
the ball. It's a risk, isn't it? I know McTominay, I think, is close to fitness and obviously, you know, much more consistent. You know what you're going to get from him, but it's a gamble. It's a gamble if you go with Pogba on these kind of days.
Yeah, the last game, Rob, he played as a number 10, really, Pogba. So really advanced, you know. And given the opposition, are we expecting McTominay and Fred? Probably.
Yeah, yeah.
So it might not be a game for Paul Pogba. It depends on the pace thing. How many of those quickies he wants in the side? How many midfield players he wants? I'm sure he wants Bruno Fernandes in the side. You know, you could have his... And I thought there was signs of this in the last game against Watford. We had 4-2-2-2. That old chest.
Narrowed them up,
He could have Fred and McTominay. He could then have
Bruno and Pogba.
And then he could have Rashford and Ronaldo for your pacey guys in behind those channels. So, in that way, you've got creators in there. You've got two holding players. I mean, that makes sense to me as a lineup. Because I think Fred and McTominay, I just think you kind of need them.
Yeah, against
a game
the
like
same
this.
Team, yeah.
So I think that would be a good setup for this game. But, I mean, Rav's changed things a lot and he'll have his ideas in this game. But, no, City will be favourites, Rob. I just think there is a, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Man United won the game, actually.
I think they've won the last three times at the Etihad, mate. Got a good record there and set up well if they can break quickly. And sure, Ronaldo's going to want to maybe show City what they missed out in not getting him. So, yeah, really good game to look forward to. Let's make that wrap it up for our midweek podcast. Chelsea searching for a new owner. Liverpool still looking for quadruple. And one of the Manchester Giants is going to be blue or red on Manchester for the weekend. We'll be back on Sunday, March the 6th, for a look back at the Manchester Derby and see if Jesse Marsh can get his Leeds career off to a winning start. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.